Welcome back, everyone. So first of all, maybe a few announcements. There will be a conference photo after this session at 11:10, so please don't run away, okay? We will catch you, we know how to find you. That's not a joke. Another announcement, the Gong Show is taking place this afternoon, so if you're interested or know somebody who is interested, then please let me know as soon as possible because I want to finalize the list. Okay, great. So it's my great pleasure to introduce Dorothea Vance, whom I have known since a long time, so I almost need that piece of paper. So she did her diploma, her undergraduate degree as well in Bible. She worked with Klaus Vollmeyer on Vollmeyer strings, so this is maybe where some of you know her. She did her PhD in Hamburg with Klaus Wernhagen, and she started working on non-primitive geometry. She was the visiting researcher in Cambridge at Nantes, La Sapienza, and finally this great place. Then she did a couple of postdocs. She was at Albert Einstein Institute in Bonn, and then assistant professor at Hamburg. And then finally, she got a tenure track in Göttingen, where she's a full professor since 2012. So please give to the floor.
Well, thank you, Kaja, for the kind introduction and the invitation, of course, to all the organizers. Thank you. It's great to be back here at PI. And yeah, I enjoyed my time here a long time ago and sometimes in between when I visited. So to be honest, when I received the invitation, I felt a bit out of my depth to be speaking in a workshop entitled Eminöter Workshop, The Structure of Quantum Spacetime, because as Kaja mentioned, so I used to work in non-commutative geometry and I still do sometimes, but I actually concentrate on other things at the moment. And so that's also what I want to tell you about today, the quantum sine-Gordon model in PAQFT. Anyhow, perturbative, I will come to that. But before I do that, maybe I can take up another word in the title, which is Eminöter. So we start with a commercial break. So as you may know, this year we're celebrating the fact that Eminöter finally received her habilitation 100 years ago. Well, finally, this habilitation went through. So what actually happened was that since 1908, women were not allowed to receive a habilitation in any of the Prussian universities, and Göttingen belonged to the Prussian universities then. And so in 1915, her department applied to have an exception for her. And it was finally turned down 2 years later in 1917, saying that they couldn't make an exception for this one woman because no women were allowed to receive a habilitation. And so what happened was, World War One, and then when it was over, the young Weimar Republic, women were allowed to vote, and also they were allowed to receive a habilitation. And so that's when they reapplied, and then in 1919, it finally went through. It's not really so much of a cause to celebrate, I mean, for one thing, because of this history, but also, on the other hand, because just 14 years later, the Nazis were elected into power, and Eminöter, along with many of her colleagues, left the Mathematical Institute in Göttingen. And, of course, fortunately, that early, because at least they didn't come to harm. So it's a bit of a good and a bad story. But
can I just one?
Yeah, sure.
So in the second meeting, David Hilbert actually got up and said, "Gentlemen, why are we debating this? We are not talking about admission to swimming pools."
I know. That is kind of. So what he said in German was, "Das ist keine Badeanstalt, meine Herren." So yes, thank you. And while she didn't receive her habilitation, she was giving lectures, which were announced by David Hilbert, and with the assistance of Fräulein Noether. And so anyway, so we're celebrating this. So if you happen to be around in Germany, we have a colloquium on the 12th of December. If you happen to be around, just let me know, and we can arrange something. Okay, anyway, so commercial break two, motivation, my talk actually. So this is commercial for my talk. So I think many physicists would agree that we need good tools to do perturbation theory in quantum field theory. However, maybe not so many would agree that with what our school is concerned with, that you don't start with Fock space. So you need to do perturbation theory without Hilbert spaces, at least not starting from Hilbert spaces, but starting from a more algebraic picture. And why would you want to do that or need to do that? Well, there are various reasons. So one of the main motivations back in 2000 was to do quantum field theory in general backgrounds. You've seen a bit of this in Yasmin's talk. So if you want to go to more general backgrounds, you may need different methods from what you usually do. And well, our community is mostly concerned with globally hyperbolic manifolds and setting up perturbation theory there. And this goes back to Brunetti, Deutsch, Friedenhagen, also Kaja, of course, did a lot of work in this direction. And also, this is also necessary if you want to do something more interesting than just quantum fields. But if you're concerned with, say, quantization of gravity, which I'm not working on, but of course, Kaja is. And something we did together with Jochen Zahn was to quantize strings and membranes in arbitrary ambient dimensions using such a framework, the framework that I will be sketching. So this is just, as I said, the commercial for the talk. In this talk, I want to apply the framework to the Sein-Gorn model, massless Sein-Gorn model, which we want to treat perturbatively. And one of the problems that one encounters when you want to do that is that the free massless theory is not actually Weidman field, so you don't really have Fock space. And I will sketch how to get around this problem in this framework of perturbative algebraic quantum field theory. Okay, so first, what is AQFT without the little p? Algebraic quantum field theory, going back to Haag, of course, Araki and many other people. And it's this idea to do quantum field theory without Hilbert spaces. So so you set up some algebraic framework, algebraic setting, and worry about the representation on some Hilbert space at a later stage. So in the typical framework would be that a model is defined by associating to each bounded region in, say, Minkowski space. This was the early days, Minkowski space, or more generally on a globally hyperbolic space-time, an algebra of observables, so A of O. That's sort of our motto. But of course, you have to satisfy certain axioms. So the most obvious one is inclusion. So if you have two such bounded regions that are included in each other, you want the algebras to be subalgebras of each other. So. And that leads to mathematically, actually, that you have a net of algebras where you know how to treat such inclusions. Then causality. We spoke about causality, locality in many different guises in this conference before. So for us, causality in this framework means that if you have algebras associated to space-like separated regions, so those which cannot communicate to each other by means of light rays, that they should commute with each other. And then the time slice axiom, I think Kaja mentioned it in Yasmin's talk. Actually, this replaces the initial value problem. So think of a PDE, and you just say at fixed time, so these are my initial conditions. And the time slice axiom sort of is the algebraic replacement of this initial value problem. And the way it's formulated here is not really just on a Cauchy surface, but you take it a small neighborhood of a Cauchy surface within this bounded region O, then actually it doesn't matter. I mean, you can either take the algebra given by this neighborhood of the Cauchy surface or the big algebra, and they are isomorphic. And then, of course, you have a number of more axioms. Most of them have to do with, you know, behavior under symmetries, etc. So if you're in Minkowski space, you want a covariance or equivariance condition regarding the Poincaré group and stuff like that. But this is not the topic of my talk, so I'm just skipping this.
Just a question. Yeah. In this time slice axioms, you're saying that the algebra of observables that you get from just thickening in the neighborhood of Cauchy surfaces, the collar neighborhood, is isomorphic to the observables in the entire space?
Because, no, not the entire, well, no, this is a Cauchy surface in this bounded region, UFO, A of O. So you have this, and then you have the Cauchy surface and you have this small region around it, and then that determines the full algebra.
Oh, okay. So
that's by causality. Yes, that's again sort of propagation of, yes.
Okay. If you have gauge symmetry, do you mean this algebra observable to be gauge invariant observable, or what's the...
Yes, but, to be honest, I myself am mostly concerned with bosonic field theory, but yes, of course, you would want to implement that as well. Here, symmetries, I was thinking of external symmetries, like Poincaré symmetry. The problem with this approach is, what good models do we have apart from, say, the free field? And so that's where Kaja and I thought that I'm skipping a slide in my head. So first of all, this. So one idea that Brunetti, Dutch, Feenhagen, also Kaja came up with was sort of to mix real-life QFT, which is basically perturbation theory, Feynman graphs, think of particle physics, actually meets this algebraic framework. So this is explaining what the little p means, little p AQFT. And the idea is to put everything in the framework of formal power series. So quantization is a deformation quantization of a certain Poisson algebra of functionals. The Pyle's bracket of Yasmin's talk will appear in a moment. And also the interaction is a star exponential. So this is like the Dyson series. Think of the Hamiltonian approach to QFT and then the Dyson series. So you have a formal power series. This is putting this into the framework of star products. And here the main tool are time ordered products, and I will come back to this in a moment. The important part is we don't start from Fock space or anything. We just start from an interaction Lagrangian. Well, for me, Laurent, usually it's just a phi to the n theory. So some interaction Lagrangian, and you have a free theory underlying this interaction, which is just a linear PDE. And so you have, hyperbolic linear PDE, so you have uniquely determined, retarded, and advanced fundamental solutions. And so this is uniquely fixed by the theory. And then you have a certain choice. You can make a certain choice, the choice of a so-called Hadamard function, which will help you to actually define the theory. And I will make clear the connection between this choice of Hadamard function and the Feynman propagator in the ordinary perturbative QFT framework. And what Kaja and Klaus did a few years ago was a perturbative construction, that's in the sense of formal power series, of a Haar-Kastler net of observables. So you would get formal power series of a certain algebra. And then they showed that the axioms that I was sketching a moment before actually hold order by order in the sense of formal power series. So this is not a construction in the sense of constructive QFT, but in the sense of formal power series. And so this is where Kaja and I thought that we should put this to a test and see if within this framework we could actually construct a theory that's known to be constructible in the other frameworks like old Glim, Jaffe, Fröhlich, Seiler, and this framework, and look at it in our framework and see if we can actually construct it. And indeed we can. So what I will show you in my talk is that we will be able to construct a Haar-Kastler net of operators acting on a certain Hilbert space. So as a phenomenon algebra of operators. And so let me tell you in a bit more detail what this PAQFT business is really about. So as I said, you have underlying some free theory, which is typically a hyperbolic linear PDE. So I'm thinking of the wave operator or maybe the Klein-Gordon operator, something like this. And then unique retarded and advanced fundamental solutions. And from this, you build the commutator function. There's a dispute going on whether this should be called the Pauli-Jordan commutator function or just the commutator function. So I'll just use both names, Pauli-Jordan commutator function. And it's not a function, of course, because it's in general a distribution. And then, as I said, you want to deform, in the sense of form a power series, a certain space of functionals. And let's have a look at what these functionals look like in not a gauge theory context, but just a bosonic theory. Otherwise, you would have some bundle here instead of just functions. Sorry?
Laura is interested in bosonic gauge theories.
Scalar theory, sorry. I'm thinking of phi to the n theories, or like this cosine of phi theory in this talk, not to make things too complicated. So functionals are just maps from smooth functions to the complex numbers, and such that the nth functional derivatives are distributions on the underlying manifold. In our cases, will just be two-dimensional Minkowski space, but it could be any globally hyperbolic manifold. And the regular functionals are such that these functional derivatives actually give you compactly supported smooth functions. So from the point of view of distributions, very, very harmless distributions, compactly supported and smooth. And an example would just be the linear functional. You just take a field from the C infinity of M and integrate against some compactly supported smooth function f, little f. And the first derivative, obviously, is just the function itself. So this is an example of a regular functional, where the first derivative is just the function itself, and the higher derivatives vanish. And then Payer's bracket we saw before in Yasmin's talk. So how do you put this Payer's bracket on such functionals? Let's think of regular functionals for the moment, because I want to ignore a lot of analytical problems here. So regular functionals, completely harmless. You take the first functional derivative, which is just a smooth compactly supported function. And again, for this other functional g, you take the first functional derivative, you get a compactly supported smooth function. And then here you take the convolution with the Pauli-Jordan commutator function, and then you pair this in the sense of distributions. And since this is rather harmless, this convolution here is harmless, and then this is a compactly supported smooth function, this is just essentially just integrating these functions, the product of these functions over M. And well, I'm not telling you some things. So for instance, is this really a Poisson bracket in the sense that it again takes values in the regular functionals? And in fact, it's not, but let's ignore this for the moment. All these things can be fixed. And I don't think I have to tell you all these analysis details.
Sorry, can I just ask a quick question? So d prime of M, script d prime of M is?
Oh, these are just the dual of the compactly supported smooth functions,
okay.
The topological dual, so the continuous continuous linear functionals on the space of compactly supported smooth functions. E prime. So these are the linear continuous. Of course, you have to say what topology functionals from compactly supported smooth functions to C. And then continuous, of course, you have to say what sort of, you put this Fréchet topology on.
Here, M is a whole spacetime, not just a...
Yeah, well, okay. Of course, when you do the, when you want to define this on a globally hyperbolic manifold, you have to do it in charts and then glue. But this is perfectly well known, so... So you define it on open subsets.
You're not looking at quasi-local regions.
No. This is different also from Yasmin's talk. Yes. And then suppose you can fix all these details about this really being a Poisson bracket. This gives you a star product via the ordinary formal deformation quantization procedure. So what you do essentially is you write down this formal power series. Form a parameter h bar, And you're looking at nth derivatives of your functionals, and then you convolute with the Pauli-Jordan function as many times as you need it. So in this case, so the n-fold tensor product. And then again, you take the pairing in the sense of distribution. So maybe I should write down. So for regular, this would be just integrating them against each other. And if these are proper distributions with singular supports, this integration procedure is extended to more general distributions. So that's what this pairing is here. OK, so this is the first form of power series we see in my talk. And there will be more. but this is sort of the general procedure of how to get a star product from a Poisson structure. And now the problem is that unless G and F are regular functionals, where these derivatives are just compactly supported smooth functions, this is not necessarily defined. This pairing with this convolution with the Pauli-Jordan commutator function. There are some analytical problems. However, what you can do is you can modify the Pauli-Jordan commutator function by a certain solution of, again, the underlying free theory. So remember, the Pauli-Jordan commutator function was constructed from two fundamental solutions, retarded and advanced. And now we're looking at an actual solution, H, that satisfies a certain analytical condition called the Hadamard condition, such that the resulting object has a certain behavior concerning its singular support, so places where it's not smooth.
Is H supposed to be symmetric?
Yes. And so this is anti-symmetric. This is the symmetric part of the two-point function. It's not unique. Well, on Minkowski space, what you would usually take is just the vacuum expectation value. I mean, you would fix this in such a way that this would be the vacuum expectation value of two fields. But in general, this is a choice you can make, and it's to some extent fixed by this Hadamard condition on the singular support, but it's not entirely fixed. And the existence of such H on arbitrary globally hyperbolic manifolds is guaranteed by a sort of a deformation argument by Fulling, Narkovich, Wald, I think, yes.
Is this Hadamard condition some kind of causality condition? Is it Euclidean or Lorentzian?
No, it's Lorentzian. It's Lorentzian. And what it says essentially is that the behavior of W should be the same as in the flat space time. So that concerning the singularities, so you're looking at the short distance behavior, and that should be the same as a Minkowski space.
Because you're in Minkowski space here.
Yes.
So free fields in Minkowski.
Yes.
So this looks very much like the two-point function, the Whiteman function.
Yes. Yes.
So. But then there you have a constraint when the Whiteman function is a pure state, then you have constraints on H.
I will come to this. So in Minkowski space, what fixes this is the behavior under the Poincaré group. So then if you want the corresponding vacuum state to be invariant, then it's fixed.
So H is like a choice of vacuum.
Yes. And if you... if you allow for this modification that you can do, I mean, because this is a solution. So concerning the free field equation, that doesn't see this because it maps H to zero. That's a solution. So you have this freedom to change the Pauli-Jordan commutator function, and this allows you to extend the star product to a larger class of functionals, not just regular ones. And again, I don't want to go into the analysis details. So there's a condition on the singular support, or more elaborately, the wavefront set of the distributions you get when you take n-fold functional derivatives. And on such functionals, this star product can be extended. and they're called microcausal. I think I will mention them again, so I'll give you the name, microcausal functionals. So these are functionals that have a certain property. When you take nth functional derivatives, then the resulting distributions have certain properties concerning the singular support. And the point is now that regardless of the choice of this H, if you're just looking at regular functionals, these star products are equivalent in the sense of star products. So what does an equivalence of star products mean? It means that you can, so this is a formal power series, and this is a formal power series. So this one calculated with respect to W, and this one calculated just with respect to the Pauli-Jordan commutator function. And they're equivalent in the sense that you can rewrite them using, again, another formal power series map starting with one. And if it starts with one, it's invertible in the sense of formal power series because you just do the geometric series construction and just treat it formally. And different choices of this function lead to equivalent star products also on the microcausal functionals. And then there's a certain completion procedure you can do, and then you actually get an algebra in the sense of formal power series. Okay, more formal power series. So we have quantization is a formal power series, sort of a formal quantization procedure of the pi-else bracket. But then we have more. So this is this doesn't concern the interaction yet. We just wrote down a star product for certain classes of functionals. But of course, when you do a perturbation theory for an interacting theory, then you also have the Dyson series, as I said before. Think of the Hamiltonian approach, and then you get this formal power series also in ordinary QFT. And in our case, well, in this framework that was developed by, among other people, by Kaja. So what you do is you're looking at a different linear combination of your fundamental solutions, retarded and advanced, and namely you take the mean. So the Pauli-Jordan commutator function was the difference. Now you're taking the mean, and this defines you on, say, this is the explicit formula again, just for regular functionals that are armless from the analytic point of view. And this called the Dirac propagator, which is just the mean, allows you to define what is called the time ordering the time ordering operator. So what you do here is you take a second 2 times n functional derivative, and if f is regular, this is just a compactly supported smooth function on n to the power 2n, and then you just write down this formal power series. And this allows you, this time ordering operator allows you to define what is called the time ordered product, and you just take, I think we've, no, I guess we haven't seen this formula before in this conference. So this is just the point-wise product, and then you apply the inverse of this operator, again, taking the sense of formal power series, so just as a geometric series. It starts with one. When n equals zeros, this is just the identity. So you can invert it, and so you invert it in the sense of formal power series, and then you take the point-wise product, and then you apply the operator again. And this defines what is called the time-ordered product. And this is all you need in order to define the formal S matrix. So what would be the scattering matrix in ordinary QFT as well. And it's just an, well, again, for suppose that you have a regular functional, which you usually don't, but suppose you have a regular functional, then the formula is just given as what is called a star exponential. So you take, here you have another form of parameter, which is the coupling constant. And then again, you take some exponential series, so 1 over n factorial, and then an n-fold time-ordered product. And that gives you, in fact, the S matrix for an interaction lambda f. And for non-regular functional, this is more complicated. However, This is the explicit formula for the regular case. And you may wonder about this 1 over h bar here. But in fact, this is since you have H-bar also in these products, there are no negative powers in H-bar.
Christian? Sure. I can see why this matches what I think of as the S matrix, but would anyone have come up with this if it hadn't been for the standard sort of mathematically unsophisticated perturbation theory?
I can't answer this question because obviously people didn't come up with it without the ordinary framework. I think
is there any obvious way of...
You should look into Google Uber.
Yeah,
so I think he was doing both.
He was thinking. So this was probably on his mind. But of course, this is sort of an abstraction of the calculations people usually do in say particle physics. And that brings me to my next slide, actually, because you may be asking yourself, so okay, we've seen the polyodon function, we've seen this H and W and the Dirac propagator. So where's the Feynman propagator? And the point is that so remember in the time order product, we had this mean of retarded and advanced propagators, fundamental solutions.
Could you explain why this mean is the usual way? Because you say you see.
Yeah. Maybe I can tell you with the formulas I will do explicitly later. So the point is that what I failed to mention, because we were discussing something else, this modifying the star product has something to do with normal ordering. And in fact, if you look at the combined Dirac propagator combined with this choice of H, then you get, if this were Minkowski space, say massive scalar field theory, then, and this would just be such that you get the vacuum expectation value of two fields, then this is what you know as the Feynman. And maybe I should say a word on renormalization. How does this occur? I mean, of course, preservation of difficulty, so somewhere renormalization has to be. And it won't be a part of this talk, but usually the difficulty is to define these time order products on non-regular functionals, and you have to do some procedure. Usually these expressions are only defined on products of your manifold without the diagonal, and then renormalization corresponds to extending the time order product to all of m to the n. But it's not necessary here, because what I want to do is the Sine-Gordon model in two dimensions. So our underlying free theory is just the wave equation in 1+1 dimension, so very well known. And the interaction potential is a cosine. So this is called the Sine-Gordon model, because when you look at the field equation, the cosine turns into a sine. And the coupling constant sort of is this little a in the argument of the cosine. And as I said in the beginning, of course, in two dimensions, the massless field is not a Whiteman field. I mean, there's no vacuum. So you cannot describe this in the usual terms of annihilation creation operators. The reason is that 1 over k is not integrable in one dimension. So that's what's behind it. And from the algebraic point of view, so what people usually do is, of course, they introduce an auxiliary mass, or they look at the currents instead of the fields, and then they are more regular in the infrared. In the algebraic picture, we say, okay, the algebra of this free field, of these free fields, exists, but the representation theory is different. So if we want to study this algebra and maybe represent it on some Hilbert space, we have to look for something else.
Can you get rid of that one by putting it on a cylinder? Just compactifying?
One could, but we're doing something else. But you will recognize what we do, I think. So let me come back to this question in a moment. Okay, so in this simple setting of just the wave equation, two dimensions, I mean, remember D'Alembert, the fundamental solutions are just step functions. So some step functions of x minus t, x plus t combinations. I didn't write down the explicit formulas. but very harmless from the point of view of distributions. And then we choose for H a certain solution. I mean, this is a distinguished in a way solution of the wave equation, log of x minus y squared, and we introduce a scale mu larger than zero. And then we do this whole procedure of constructing star products, etc. And of course, we can do this for vertex operators, for instance. So we're looking at functionals, and in fact, these are microcausal, so we're okay with our framework. And these are, you will recognize, I guess, I hope, the vertex operators, so e to the I, a phi, and a and r, and then just integrated against some compactly supported, well, I guess I should have put smooth here, smooth test function g. And then if you look at the star products, the way we define them, so here I set the scale equal to 1. That's a little 1 here. H1 is h mu with the scale mu set to 1. You see that you really get a star product for these vertex operators. And when you do the calculations, you see that they converge as long as a squared is less than 4 pi over h bar. And you get the ordinary, so if you calculate the commutation relations, you get the ones that you know from the vertex operator algebra. So so far, so good, so it's all fine. And of course, we want to use such vertex operators to define the interaction. Because remember, this was the cosine, so this will be a linear combination of such vertex operators. And I'm rushing a bit now, so sorry. So what about so let me skip this and come down to this question here. So so I told you that we start from this choice of Hadamard function, which is given by the log and includes the scale mu. The problem is that it's not positive. So it fails to satisfy this condition that if you pair it with f twice, that it's bigger than zero, bigger or equal to zero. In fact, it's only positive for test functions with Van der Schen integral. So this has to do with this question of do you want to look at the currents or do you want to look at the fields themselves? And so there was a student of Klaus Rinhang's actually who by hand introduced extra terms that led to another such function that's actually positive. And these extra terms depended on a choice of a test function with of total integral 1 and a certain parameter larger than 0. So, but this was sort of done by hand to fix this positivity condition.
So the extra terms and what the...
I explain them in a different term now. And I think you will recognize them from string theory. So actually, these extra terms can be understood in the sense of that you're actually looking at a different way to represent the free field, different from ordinary Fock space. So what you do is you have to take care of the zero modes. So I think this rings a bell with you. So what you do is this is ordinary Fock space, and then you tensor with sort of an auxiliary extra L2 space. And why the hat? It's because this carries a representation of the canonical commutation relations, and where the momentum is realized as a multiplication operator. So that's why we put the hat on the R. And then the representation is, so you choose a test function with total integral 1. And then what you do is here you subtract, so you evaluate in a test function G. And you see here the canonical, just ordinary Fock space sort of massless field. And it's evaluated in by construction a test function of vanishing integral. You project out. So if you take the integral of this test function, it's obviously zero because the total integral of psi is one. So you project out everything else. But you, of course, if you do this, you lose some information and you regain it using this auxiliary L2 space. And in fact, Dierzynski and Meissner wrote it sort of like in this way. And we sort of rediscovered it and
Q and P are your canonical operators.
Yes, acting on L2 in the usual way.
So delta is the Laplacian.
The commutator function. It's a commutator function. Sorry.
So can one understand this in terms of the following thing? That in one plus one dimension, right? I mean, if I just take this free scalar field, mm-hmm. then I have this non-trivial vacuum, right? Which I can go to constant value at one end and another constant value at another end. And therefore, really, even for the free field, I have to make a bigger space if I allow all these things. And that has
yes.
the same structure as L2 of R. So can I?
Yes.
Is there a close relation between the two?
I would have to think about the explicit formulas, but I would suspect that there's probably even an explicit relation.
So and this is really the infrared problems that happen at Scry.
Yeah. So maybe. So the observation, was that. The modified positive Hadamard function is actually the vacuum expectation value. Well, vacuum, what does it mean? Of two fields, where this vacuum is the Fock vacuum tensor and the harmonic oscillator, ground state.
But then there's a freedom, right? I could have chosen some other state in there.
Yes, and I will come to this. So anyway, if you look at this representation, what you can prove is that, and what we proved, I put 19 because we're still hoping to get it published in CMP this year, but maybe it will be 20. So the preprint has been out for ages, yes. Anyway, so maybe it's 20 that is actually published. Remember from my discussion of the vertex operators that there was this condition on our coupling constant A, and if we are in this,
time's up,
yeah. So in this ultra, well, there were a lot of questions, which is very good. So can I have two more minutes?
Okay.
So if you calculate the S matrix using these formal power series, and then realize the operators as operators on this Fock space tensor L2, then actually what you can show is that it strongly converges on a dense domain. So really as operators, and it really gives rise to a unitary operator acting on this Dzerzhinsky-Meissner representation space. And the estimates are, you know, you have to do it by hand. You have to check. So what we checked was just order by order in this perturbative expansion, and then checked that the convergence was good enough. And then we showed that the resulting operator was really unitary. The estimates, however, are unfortunately really tied to two dimensions. And essentially, in the end, you can use older estimates that work in the Euclidean and they also work in our framework, and what is better in this framework in this Dzerzhinsky-Meissner representation is that we don't need auxiliary mass or anything. We just we can work with the massless theory directly. Now, of course, the question was okay, why this representation? Okay, so far we don't really have a better answer than that it works. But of course, we have to look for better representation spaces. But in order to do so, let me just maybe make the statement and not actually show you the construction in detail. So as I said in the beginning, Kajai and Klaus worked on the Haar-Kastler axioms in this formal power series framework. And what we show is that if you do this construction, which relies heavily on what's called the relative S matrix, then we can actually show that I can go here. So originally, this is defined in terms of formal power series. And what we could show again was that in this Dzerzhinsky-Meissner representation, all these expressions, all these formal power series converge strongly on a dense domain and give rise to unitary operators. And this gives rise to really a net of von Neumann algebras. So they're realized on this Dzerzhinsky-Meissner representation space. and satisfy by by those formal arguments, and they extend to the to these convergent series, all the axioms are satisfied. But as you said, of course, why the Dzerzhinsky-Meissner representation? So the next goal, of course, must be to look for the vacuum representation. But that's, of course, not so easy. So ongoing work with Nicola Pinamonti and with Kaja Reisner is to at least look at thermostates and look at the representations you get if you start from KMS states. And this is ongoing work. And as soon as we have this vacuum state, I mean, that would be really great because that would also give us an opportunity and the possibility to really compare this to what has been done in Euclidean field theory. And I'm looking forward to that because this is something that some of you who've known me for some time know that I've always been interested in this question of, you know, Euclidean and Minkowski signature problems. And this is something where I would really love to come back to and really check how Oosterwalder-Schrader positivity and all this stuff is related. So thank you for your attention and for the questions. And thanks for the extra time.
Questions? Yeah.
To clarify, so you had this addition of H, which was a B solution,
mm-hmm.
but then you couldn't satisfy positive definiteness. So these additional terms by Schröder-Schrader.
No. So this one.
What?
Yeah.
So they are also B solutions. Is it also a B solution?
Yes, it's again a B solution. Yes. So it's in fact this one. So so this is the original one plus the extra terms, and it's given in terms of this expectation value. Yes.
Any more questions?
So I mean, if in fact there is a relation with these infrared issues that mm-hmm. we talk about in mm-hmm. one plus one because of this vacuum at one end not being the same as a vacuum at another end, then I would expect that somehow in this final picture, the boosts are not well represented. Somehow there is some ambiguity. These are the things that Buchholz has pointed out long time ago about issues of.
Of course.
Is it true here?
Yeah, you have. Boost? Well, you have a sort of covariance. This psi. You have this choice of this total integral one function psi, and that of course transforms in some way. Its support transforms in some way. So you have. We understand well the sort of a covariance condition, but it's not invariant.
It's not invariant. Right? Yeah, it should be covariant, but not invariant.
But if it were invariant, then you would have the ordinary vacuum.
Exactly. So it would not have worked. So okay. So it's very similar to the infrared problems. So angular momentum is not going to be well defined. The ethics in this case.
So
I'm
trying to finish this so much discussion, but let's postpone this to coffee break and let's thank you again.